Welcome to another episode of Leadership Academy, and I hope you guys are ready to learn because we are here to teach, and we love having conversations with consultants, with authors, with business professionals that have value that they are willing to give. And that's what this show is all about. I mean, if you're a lifetime learner, if you enjoy leveling up your level of leadership, and you want to know the best strategies to put in place, then you're in the right place. And I'm excited because our conversation today is going to be a phenomenal one. For those of you that haven't heard my voice yet, my name is Brian Stone. I am guest hosting on behalf of AJ Willoughby for this podcast. And, you know, my background is in consulting and in real estate. So I'm excited to jump in and fill in some big shoes for AJ today. Speaking of titans in business and in consulting, I'm meeting with the one and only Lee Crumbaugh. And he's an author, strategic thinker, consultant, coach. He's had a fascinating background, you know, be it journalism, you know, graduating from, you know, from school business to having multiple ventures along the way, and then putting all of that into his two books, one of which we're really going to focus on today, which is called Big Decisions. So I won't butcher any more of that intro. We'll just jump right in. Lee, how are you, sir?
I am fine, Brian. It's great to sit with you. And you didn't butcher anything in the intro.
Oh, perfect. Well, you know, it's tough because you've got quite the resume, sir. I could probably spend half of our episode just talking about all the different ventures you've had over the years. But I'm sure that, you know, above all of that, it's kind of a culmination, your most recent book, of a lot of the lessons you've learned along the way, right? I mean, tell us correct. A little bit about your book. About yeah, sure. Why you chose to talk about that and what the core concepts right. are.
After I got out of University of Chicago, I worked in the banking sector and got interested in strategy because I learned over time that if you weren't going the right direction, it didn't matter how well or poorly you conducted business, you weren't going to have good results. So based on my University of Chicago education and my initial management experience, I decided I want to be a strategist. And after starting a publishing company and doing a few other things, I finally hung out my consulting shingle and worked with organizations on strategy. There were a couple diversions along the way. I was a nonprofit executive, and I ran a construction-related trade association for a while, but then I hung my shingle out again. So all that stuff I did helped me see the value of planning, gave me the experience of not just working with clients on planning, but being, you know, applying it to my own leadership roles. And what I learned over time is, as we say, planning is fun, execution is work. And the data says that 70% of strategic plans are either not implemented or implemented poorly. And that became my professional mission, not just to get people to plan, but to implement. And so when I popped back into consulting, I joined an organization now called the International Association for Strategy Professionals. And I wound up being board chair very quickly, mainly because of my association experience. And in that position, helped update the body of knowledge for strategic planning and strategic management. And I started giving talks about how strategic planning fails because we don't implement and we need to do something about that. And I wrote my first book in the vein of trying to help people understand how to plan and how to implement. And then I realized that wasn't enough. Well, I knew it wasn't enough, but because it dawned on me based on reading some really smart authors that we don't make good decisions. We don't make good strategic decisions. And planning and implementation requires a series of good decisions. So what was that all about? And that led me to 7 years of research trying to understand mental traps, biases, heuristics, which are shortcuts, memory problems, you know, all the things that tell me or tell someone who reads my book, we are not logical thinkers, despite the fact that we think we are. I am more likely to be swayed in my decision making because I like someone. I'm more likely to be swayed in my decision making because the group thinks a certain way or the leader thinks a certain way. I cut to the chase when I shouldn't. You know, we have this fight or flight mechanism that we're wired, what Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel Prize winner, calls system one. We are wired to make snap, quick decisions. Do I run from the bear or do I hunker down or do I fight, right? That does not work well in the kind of decision making you need to get to a better place in the future. You've got to kick in system two, which is Kahneman tells us is that very deliberate, let go of the frames you put around information, seek more information, hypothesize, see what the information's telling you, think about how you might be biased, ask other people, right? If you think you know the story and there's no one else to ask, tell another story based on what you see. Don't look for, I could do A or B. No. I could do A through ZZ, then narrow it, right? We tend to just say, oh, I can do X or Y. Sorry, there's all sorts of things you possibly could do. Most of those are probably not good ideas, but if you don't get them out there, you can't consider them.
Well, you know, you're hitting on a lot of points there, you know, that I'd love to highlight, you know, because Lee, you said it perfectly, you know, we're wired to, you know, I've always called it ready, fire, aim, right? I mean, because we're almost built to make those quick decisions. And the higher you are in your level of leadership, the more prone you are to having tunnel vision and not having the perspective and the thought required to make a good strategic decision, right?
Leaders and people with power are prone to make worse decisions than people who don't have power and who aren't leaders, because leaders are less prone to listen. They're more prone to think they're right. I mean, yeah, it works against us.
Well, you talk about that in your book, right? And you talk about 40 disastrous decisions, right? That you
have
case studies, right? That really highlight good, bad examples, right? Of when decisions were made that weren't thoughtfully done and strategic.
The worst airplane disaster ever to have happened was the head-on collision of two 747s in the Azores in the 70s. And one of the 747s was the first one put into service as a commercial aircraft. And the second one was piloted by the chief pilot of KLM, probably one of the best commercial aircraft pilots in the world. And there's a variety of reasons why that happened. But the underlying reason was he wanted to get back to Amsterdam for some good reasons. But it led to bad decisions about taking off in the fog, about ignoring what his crewmates were saying about the radio communications. Right? You know, he got so bound up in the minutia, not the minutia, but the one thing that he lost situational awareness.
Well, and I think the more success you have as a leader, the more prone you are to make a poor decision, because you almost get that, that chip on your shoulder, for lack of a better word, because, you know, you have a string of successes behind you potentially, and you're like, well, I'll be fine. I'm professional. I know how to navigate this. If something unexpected comes up, I'll handle it. Right. And so at a certain point, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, do you see where leaders at a certain point are more prone to make bad decisions because they have had success?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because success doesn't teach us anything. All it teaches us is we did this before and it accrued greatly to us. So let's keep doing this. Well, the problem is, in the big picture, the world changes. And in the micro picture, the circumstances may not be the same. You can't just keep doing the same thing. To make a big decision, you've got to go back to the problem statement and assessing the situation. You can't just assume. Absolutely.
Well, and you know, I love that your approach to your book, to making these big decisions, is to start with not successes necessarily, but to start with all these cases where bad decisions, where poor decisions were made, disastrous decisions were made, because that's where you can learn a lot about how not to do things or how to do things differently. So, we talked about kind of the introductory aspect of your book, but, you know, tell us a little bit about the other key concepts that, you know, you establish. You know, the importance of it. You talked about some other cases. What's the framework to follow to actually start making better decisions in a leadership role?
Yeah. First of all, should you even be making the decision?
Hmm.
Right. If there is not a pressing need for the decision, why are you making it? So, you know, assess if it's an important decision, first of all, and then form it into a problem that you are trying to solve. Hang on, I am coming up with my framework here so I can talk intelligently about it rather than run on, and it is right here. Okay. So the first thing you have to do you need to make the big decision? And if it is a big, if it's what to have for breakfast, that's ridiculous. Just, you know, have whatever. It does not matter. You can use System 1 on that. But if it's truly a big decision, what I call a strategic decision, then slow it down. Take a step back from it and be humble. I don't have this. I don't know what I need to know. I am not yet prepared to decide. You may actually have what you need to know, but don't assume it. Then write it as a problem statement. What's the decision you need to make? Why am I deciding this? What leads me to believe whatever the proposition is, why am I pressed into making this decision? Am I biased? You know, has someone influenced me? If I decide, will I get what I want? What do I want out of the decision? Maybe I can't get what I want even if I make the decision. So then you've got a problem statement, and then you look at, how am I biased? Am I primed or anchored? If I had said the number 7 to you a bunch of times in the last 10 minutes, and then I said, pick a number between 1 and 10, you would be more likely to pick the number 7. Proven fact. If you get a group Absolutely. Of 25 people, you'll get more 7s than anything else. They were primed. Just the way it works. What presuppositions do you have? Are you burdened with sunk cost? I love sunk cost. So what that means is we get invested in the things we've invested time and money and attention in, whatever it is. And it's hard for us to let go of those things. So remember the supersonic transport, the Concorde?
Yeah, absolutely.
It was never going to make a dime. The economics were never profitable. It was the worst investment ever. But because of national pride, because of sunk costs, well, we can't abandon this. You know, Great Britain and France just kept investing and investing and investing. Just purely as a business decision, that was stupid.
Yeah.
But they did it because of sunk costs. They were so into it. So because when we're so into things, we can't see the other opportunities, the opportunity costs, the other things we could do with that time, attention, and money. So am I being burdened by sunk cost? Groupthink, huge, huge. We want to go with the group. We don't want to be the outlier. People don't necessarily want to speak up. So it just happens. Luck. If we look at Bill Gates, accepting the fact he's a very bright man.
Sure.
And he did make some good decisions. His father was, you know, the biggest business lawyer in the Washington state. His mom was on the board of the United Way. They bought Bill computers when nobody had computers. He went to the private schools. When he finally, you know, came up with MS-DOS and he was trying to sell it, his mom got him the connection at IBM, and so on and so on and so on, right? So recognize the effect of luck. We tend to listen to experts who aren't real experts. That can lead us astray. And so on. So, you know, look for more evidence. Get other people's views on what you see. Hey, Brian, this is what I think my options are. This is what I think the problem that I'm trying to solve or the decision I need to make is. What do you think? And then listen.
Well, you know, I love the scientific nature of your approach too, because essentially it is, you know, I think there's a lot of emotion involved with things like sunk cost, and there's a lot of emotion involved with running a company or leading a team within a larger company. And you know, you're hitting the nail on the head right there, because you know, it's so easy to fall into the trap of believing that, you know, you're destined, right? You're in the right direction. You're biased, but science, if you take a scientific approach to business, absolutely starts from the place of it being untrue, and it's your job to prove it true, right? Where I think optimistically, a lot of people who are entrepreneurial in their thought process, they believe in the success and the potential and the opportunity, and they back into the decision or they back into a place. And they're already biased from the get-go because, of course, they want it to succeed because there's a tangible outcome for them if it does.
Yes. But I will say prospect theory, which Kahneman and Tversky formulated, says that we human beings are more risk averse than is logical. And it's probably because we were running around, you know, hundreds of thousands of years ago with animals chasing us. And, you know, we didn't want to take any risks. So the entrepreneurial spirit is not necessarily a bad thing. It's that you don't throw all caution to the wind, right? That's
sure.
That's the problem. It's a matter of degree. But we are better off taking on a little more risk than than we do. And the black swan kind of wanders into that. Taleb, you know, tells us we should cast options out there. So when opportunities come along, we capitalize on them. And when disasters come along, we're protected to some extent, as opposed to just sitting in the middle or even a little bit hunkered down and not trying things.
But I think that, you know, what really stood out to me when you were explaining that is humility, right? You talked about even if you have everything that you need to make the good decision, the good strategic decision, approaching it with a level of humility that allows you to make sure that you're seeing everything is huge. So
I want to give you a secret that I hope everybody picks up on. It's called the pre-mortem. You know what a post-mortem is. The doctors stand around and say, well, the patient died because of XYZ or not, whatever. A pre-mortem is, okay, this is what I'm going to decide tentatively. Now let's us, or if it's just yourself, you, think of everything that could go wrong. How could this not work out, right? So then you pick the biggest things that could go wrong and you figure out how can we mitigate that or, you know, get around it or insure against it or whatever. Again, it's taking a step back and thinking about ramifications and how to avoid the bad ones.
Well, and that's using your strategic mind, right, to make the decision versus taking actions on, lagging indicators, right, after everything's happened. It's a whole lot easier to look at something that's already broken and look backwards and say, well, this is what went wrong. Yeah, that you're exactly right. The postmortem is way easier to diagnose than the premortem. But I love that thought process because you're exactly right, Lee. I mean, if you take the time to think about what all could go wrong instead of strictly what could go right, you're able to mitigate your risk.
Well, and there is something called the planning fallacy, which means when we lay out a plan, we naturally think it's going to go right. And that's why things are late. That's why things aren't made right. So if you do a premortem, it helps mitigate against the planning fallacy.
My wife oftentimes tells me that that's where optimism fails me, right? Because I'm the optimist, she's more the pessimist, and she talks about it in sense of time, just to give you a good example, because this is what it made me think of. She said, I'm a time optimist, which means I think I can always, things are always going to take less time than they actually do. I'm going to get somewhere in less time than it actually takes. And the practice that she has me do is to double it, right? So if my inclination is to say, I'll be home by 6, she says, well, if you think you're getting wrapped up in 30 minutes, it's 5:30 and you think you're going to be there at 6, just double it and say it's going to be 6:30, right? So, because you're right, there is a level of bias in your thought process when you want something to succeed.
So then you have to execute the decision. I'll give you a few. I don't know how much time we have left, but I'll give you a couple execution hints. One is, tell somebody else what you've decided. Go public with it, because your universe will help hold you accountable for what you're trying to do. Use intermediate rewards to yourself, but more importantly, to the group or team or whatever, meaning break it down. So we've done that step. Great. You know, you get a hand, you get applause, you get a bonus, you get whatever. I don't care what it is, something that's meaningful. It doesn't have to be huge.
So celebrate those benchmarks instead of just waiting for the
Yeah. Take small bites and then big bites. You know, they say, how do you eat an elephant? A small bite at a time. That's true in the beginning of when you're trying to achieve something big. But over time, people get upset there's not enough progress. So open your aperture and take bigger jumps later on. Yeah, we can knock a bunch of that off now. And then always be assessing, how are we doing? Are we on course? Do we need to change direction or not? And then keep score, right? KPIs, keep score.
Well, you mentioned this earlier, and I think that this is just to kind of put a bow on that. You talked about strategic planning, and you also talked about strategic management, right? And what we're talking about now, just to clarify, is strategic management, right? It's not Correct. About just having the plan. It's Correct. While you're in the execution phase, you're tracking what needs to be tracked. You're celebrating what needs to be celebrated. Yeah,
100%. That's exactly right.
Perfect. Well, I know that I want to be thoughtful of your time and our listeners' time too, Lee, but you know, not to cut you short or anything, but is there any other major concept that you feel like you want people to hear from the book, or is there a good resource for them to find the book if they want to find out more, read it, or
Yeah, let me talk about one way of thinking that we don't engage in enough, and it's kind of hard for people to wrap their heads around. So they're probably going to want to read about it, but it's Bayesian analysis. And basically, you're thinking in terms of probabilities. What is the probability of this happening versus that happening? Right? And if you think in terms of probabilities, you'll make better decisions, because otherwise it's just yes, no, black, white. Right? The bell curve, you know, it's that kind of stuff. The world is not statistically reliable. I mean, we tend to think that there's a central tendency in everything, and things can be very skewed. Very skewed. So if you think in terms of probabilities, you think like a Bayesian, you'll probably be better off.
Great advice.
Love okay. It. Big decisions. Amazon. Where else? All you have to do is go big decisions. You can go my name if you want. You'll find it.
Well, I appreciate your time today. I appreciate you taking the time to share not only about your book, but about the inspiration behind it.
Well,
your own perspective.
You probably did AJ proud with this interview, Brian. So thank you.
Well, you made it easy, Lee. So he set it up for me. I was just here to finish. But I guess execution, to your point, does matter, right? He may have set the plan, but if I execute it, I guess that's an
equal. A plan that's not executed is worthless. So look at it that way.
That's true. Well, look, I know that, you know, in the ever-changing world of business, there is always room for people to grow and to level up and to learn. And so once again, I mean, I really appreciate your time, Lee. And those of you that are listening, if you've gotten value from this conversation, you want to find out more, check out Big Decisions. You know, take a look at it. Add it to your reading list. You know, make sure that you are positioning yourself to make good decisions, good strategic, well thought decisions, rather than just going ready, fire, aim, because your business deserves your strategic mind, and it deserves your time and attention, and to give it the space that it needs to make those decisions.
And your life deserves that too. This works just as well for your big life decisions. So yes.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing that up too. Yeah. I mean, in business and in life, absolutely. The decisions are big. And I know personally, I'm looking at this and I don't want to be one of those 40 disastrous decisions, because I'm sure you had to pick 40 and there's probably plenty more that you could
have. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, Brian.
Well, Likewise, likewise. I've got to do all the podcast stuff. So those of you that are listening, look, if you enjoyed the show, let AJ know how you liked it. Make sure that you follow for more great conversations in business, and make sure that you check out our other network of shows. If you enjoyed learning, if you enjoyed the conversation with Lee today, chances are you might like some of the other podcasts that we have on our network too. You can find the full network of shows on smallbusinessdelivered.com. We have all kinds of topics that you can check out. As a quick plug for the show sponsor, this is actually produced and sponsored by Titan Media Works. They are a full service podcast production company. They're a done for you service. So if you want to have a podcast of your own out there and you want people to make you look good like they do with me, which is a hard job, trust me, that they've got you covered. Until next time, though, stay tuned, keep learning, make sure that you're out there continuing to lead your people in a meaningful way. And I look forward to the next conversation here on Leadership Academy. Talk soon. Thanks again.